Part of our community service is to bring to you news critical to your life or business. And today our focus is business. Our partnership, one of our key partnerships here in the greater Richmond, Petersburg, and surrounding county area, is with the Virginia Chamber of Commerce. And we have some legislative news that you really need to know, especially if you're a business owner. So what we have on the interview is Mr. Keith Martin. He's the Executive Vice President of Public Policy and Government Relations and also General Counsel for the Virginia Chamber of Commerce. And we have Mr. Charles Meyer, who's both Chairman of the Board this year of the Virginia Chamber of Commerce and Managing Partner with O'Hagan and Meyer. Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for joining the show.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
Great talking to you. I appreciate you guys finding the time to be on. So let's get right to it. Tell us about the legislative session and the chamber's initiative with respect to legal reform. Are any of those accomplishments you want to talk about that went into effect at the beginning of the month?
Bill, yes, this is Charlie Meyer, and thanks for inviting us on to talk with your audience. Every year, the chamber is focused on promoting legislation which is good for business, because if it's good for business, it's good for all Virginians, all the employees who work at those businesses. And we had a couple of initiatives that were successful this year. The first was a bill to allow for summary judgment in Virginia based upon sworn deposition testimony. And to step back for your audience, summary judgment is when a case that may be frivolous or lack merit can be thrown out of court by the judge in an early motion before it gets to a jury. So it saves time and costs. And around the country, every state has the right to move for summary judgment, a business or individual in litigation, to dismiss frivolous lawsuits based upon sworn deposition testimony or affidavits. Every state, that is, except Virginia, until this year.
Wow.
So we pushed for a business bill in business-to-business litigation, where one business is in litigation with another, that the businesses would have the right to move for summary judgment based upon those depositions. So it's a huge step forward for Virginia business.
Now, let me ask you, would that also allow, if it's a frivolous lawsuit, would that provide the basis for the business that was sued to respond back and say, hey, that was frivolous and I'm going to turn around because of summary judgment and I'm going to sue you for, you know, wasting our time?
Unfortunately, no. Now, there's always, you know, rules of civil procedure which allow for, you know, a litigant to move for costs if it's a baseless lawsuit filed in bad faith. But those are very difficult to pursue. So that law hasn't changed. That's still there as an option. But finally, we're the 50th state to get there and to level the playing field so that at least in business litigation cases, you can move to dismiss those kind of frivolous lawsuits where there really is no genuine dispute of material fact for a jury to decide. So the judge can throw it out. Bill that we're very proud of that was just passed. Again, we're talking about laws that went into effect 8 days ago on July 1. And that's the Corporate Deposition Reform Bill. And that was a bill which basically was designed to prevent harassing depositions of corporate executives, CEOs, CFOs, COOs, anyone in the C-suite. Because oftentimes, Bill, what you see in these cases is plaintiffs will decide, all right, we're going to line up a whole bunch of corporate executives and take their depositions for days and ask them a whole bunch of questions and put the squeeze on them. And that way, they'll be more inclined to settle, to cough up some money just to get rid of the harassing litigation. And what this bill does is it allows a corporate officer in a company to say, wait a second, we've got a corporate representative we can designate to answer these questions. And it doesn't have to be the CEO or the CFO or someone else in the C-suite of the company. As long as that other individual can answer those questions in a more efficient, less costly, less harassing manner, the courts are now going to allow that to go forward. So that's another positive step for Virginia business to eliminate that additional cost. And part of what we're trying to accomplish there, Bill, is, again, we're trying to make Virginia's legal climate as favorable as possible and fair for business so they're not subject to harassing litigation.
Yeah, you actually anticipated my question from both of those, is that As somebody who's lived around the country, I wasn't born in Virginia, and I've lived in Virginia five or six different times. Part of that was the military. But Virginia has always seemed to be, regardless of which party is in power, one of the better-run states in the United States. What took Virginia so long on the first one to be the 50th state on the summary judgment?
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, there are a number of plaintiff's attorneys who had a very active interest in making sure that all the cases go forward to a jury, and they were persuasive for years. They're still persuasive. You know, you can't get summary judgment based on depositions in Virginia state court for other cases, say, for example, personal injury cases. You just can't rely on deposition testimony as the law is currently written. So we'd love to see those reforms as well for other types of cases. But this is an important step forward. And, you know, there was obviously some interest against it, but that was able to move forward effectively, at least in these business cases, to promote Virginia business interests.
And the other one that struck me on depositions, I'm not an attorney, but I've been around it enough and been on both ends to see this, is that also on the depositions, that would probably save a business from fishing expeditions where the other side doesn't have anything and hoping in a deposition that they could find something.
That's right. The only way that a plaintiff could make the argument successfully, as that law is drafted, would be to argue that, you know, the C-suite, the CEO, the corporate executive or officer of the company has personal knowledge which the plaintiff is entitled to discover through the deposition. But if the information is readily accessible and can be shared through a representative, through someone else that the company designates, then that's the path that the courts are now going to be following, which is good.
Well, as a business owner for the last 40 years, as a serial entrepreneur, I really should say, that sounds great. Those two things sound like they're really significant. And the first one I didn't realize around the summary judgment, I had not been there. But the deposition one, I've been here because I was an executive vice president of one company of HR. And I can't tell you how many times out in California I had to play this game. So great news. Those are two great accomplishments. What other steps has the Virginia Chamber taken to promote a fair legal system within Virginia for the business community?
Well, Bill, as Charlie mentioned, we try to take a proactive approach to improve our legal climate, our business climate in the state, promote bills for regulatory reform, economic development. But it seems like we've been spending approximately 75 to 80% of our time at the General Assembly defeating bad bills. Unfortunately, a lot of anti-business bills do get introduced into the General Assembly. And the number of bills that are introduced every year is steadily increasing. This past session, over 3,100 bills were introduced, but only over 850 were actually signed into law by the governor. And the chamber just recently completed an ROI examining some of these bad bills or anti-business bills. And we've determined that if some of these bills had become law, that it would cost businesses in the state over $17 billion a year if those laws became effective.
Wow, that is definitely worth anybody who is a member of the Virginia Chamber. That's an incredible investment.
And that's, you know, unfortunately what we're spending most of our time studying, looking at these bad bills and trying to defeat them before they become law and have a detrimental impact on our national rankings, on economic development, et cetera.
Yeah, because that, you know, it almost sounds like it's an old Star Wars movie where you're out there with your lightsaber knocking these things down as they're boom, boom, they're coming through. Well, what are some examples of bills that were defeated and did not pass?
Well, two of the prominent ones that we looked at for our ROI, one has to do with right to work. As you know, Virginia is a right to work state, and there was a bill to eliminate right to work. If that bill had passed, we estimate it would cost the Commonwealth over $1 billion a year to the economy. Another one that I'll mention is the Commonwealth's New Green Deal, a bill that would eliminate the use of fossil fuels and only use alternative fuel sources. We've estimated will cost the Commonwealth $9.7 billion to our economy every year.
Yeah, and on the second one, as somebody who has an engineering degree, I know that there are parts of the country where solar geothermal are excellent choices, alternative choices. Not true in the Southeast. In the Southeast, actually, an analysis done by Virginia Power, by Florida Power and Light when I was working with them, was that nuclear was really the only viable alternative to fossil fuels. So that's interesting you were able to stop that.
Yeah, Bill, this is Charlie. Just to echo Keith's point, we kind of view it at the chamber as our kind of chamber Hippocratic oath, do no harm. So one of the issues is, you know, if you've got over 3,100 bills being proposed at the session, and 850 or so are actually signed into law, that means over 1,200 bills are being knocked down, being defeated. And the price tag, as Keith pointed out, is in excess of $19 billion a year in savings to Virginia businesses. And a couple of other examples I would just highlight. There was a paid family medical leave act that was proposed. And that's a very popular topic. It makes sense. Hey, I want to be paid for the time I'm taking off to take care of a sick family member or perhaps the birth of a new child. But the issue there is it's really redundant of the Family Medical Leave Act that's there, passed by Congress back in 1990. Now, that's unpaid leave, but a lot of companies have the opportunity to provide additional leave, have maternity leave policies and other leave policies. So the chamber's view on that was, wait a second, let's not be duplicative of what is already offered under federal law to all businesses in Virginia. And if we were to enact that paid Virginia leave law that was proposed and defeated, it would have resulted in a 0.4% payroll tax on every Virginia business.
Yeah.
In other words, something like $750 million a year is what that would have cost Virginia businesses.
Yeah, without getting into the motives of the people that brought that bill forward, I had to administer a FEMLA, and I know that it is challenging because on the one hand, it makes a lot of sense, and it sounds like the humanitarian thing to do. But the impact on business with the rules is that, for example, I could not hire to replace, so I had to go to temporary, you know, and if you're in a slack work environment, filling that position for a period of time wasn't difficult. But in this economy, somebody's gone for a month, good luck with that.
Exactly. Yeah, that can be very damaging to a business. And the other result is you just can't keep your same payroll, right? If you've got a 0.4% payroll tax and you're having to pay that additional amount for paid leave, you're going to have to shrink your workforce to keep your same margins.
Absolutely. There are a lot of people who don't understand the easiest way to look at business is you play the game of thirds. One third is labor, one third is material, and one third is gross margin. And then hopefully you got profit at the end of the day. But if you increase the cost of labor by, say, raising the minimum wage or doing this, I'm going to hire less people because I'm not going to let my labor costs get above about one third of the total cost of operation on the variable cost side. I see also a comment about eliminating the cap. What's that, Charlie?
Well, so there was a bill that was proposed this past session to eliminate the cap on punitive damages under Virginia law. So Virginia law has a very sensible law in place, which is to limit the amount of punitive damages that an individual can recover in a lawsuit. Oftentimes you see that, say, for example, in personal injury lawsuits where there's evidence of reckless behavior or intentional disregard for the safety of others, perhaps because someone's speeding through a safety zone and injures someone. That individual, the defendant in that case, can be liable for punitive damages, but there's a cap at $350,000 because the law is designed, you'll get compensated as a plaintiff for your compensatory damages, for the amount of your injuries and lost wages from work. But then the punishment damages, punitive damages, there's a sensible cap of $350,000. The idea there with that bill, which was defeated, fortunately for Virginia business, was, hey, let's eliminate the cap. They can get millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in punitive damages. And what would that do? It would put that business out of business. And you know, that you see that in headlines around the country, Bill, where other companies are tagged for millions, sometimes billions of dollars in punitive damages, where the underlying damage to the plaintiff is actually quite a bit less.
Right. And it's punitive. In other words, it's the jury reacting emotionally to what they heard and perhaps acting, it's not proportional to whatever the crime or the offense was.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Well, that sounds like some great work, great accomplishments here going into the I guess not the second half of the year, because actually the state system operates from July to June. So starting the state year here in 2019-2020. Gentlemen, what do you have on the horizon? What's coming down the road here that we can inform our listening audience about?
Well, one thing that we're particularly interested in promoting is a pilot business court. So we've been in conversation with the Virginia Supreme Court to form a docket, a business docket or court, which is focused on business cases. So what happens now, Bill, is you may have a circuit court judge in a jurisdiction who, before getting on the bench as a judge, practiced as a criminal defense lawyer and is really good and knowledgeable in the area of criminal law, but may not know a whole lot about business law. And so what we're trying to do in Virginia is something that's been done in a couple of other states and some other localities around the country very successfully. The two best examples we found are North Carolina and Delaware, to our north and our south, where they've had successful business courts for a number of years. And what it does is you have judges who are steeped in business law. That's what they practice when they were in private practice. They know about those laws. So those cases are handled very efficiently by jurists who are familiar with that area of law, and they're streamlined. So you end up not sharing the docket with other types of cases like criminal cases or personal injury cases. And we think that that's going to be a huge advantage to Virginia businesses to get fast and fair justice in those types of cases.
Oh, it definitely sounds that way, because you have a judge who understands business, number one, and number two, yeah, their docket is not consumed with other things, so they can move through here faster and come up with better decisions. I think that's great. Well, I appreciate you all being on the phone with us today talking about what you've been doing, and also want to express my gratitude to Amy Hager, who is Director of Communications for the Virginia Chamber, and our partnership. It's really helping 820 become the station to listen to, especially if you are in the small business arena. I've been a serial entrepreneur now for 40 years, started a number of businesses, and we are probably the most neglected part of any community, because most of the jobs, 90% of all the jobs, come from small businesses with 20 or fewer employees. And it's great work that you all are doing, because you're making it easier for us to be successful in a very tough environment. Even in a good economy like this, it isn't easy to start and grow a company. So I want to thank everybody. Have a great business day, and we'll be speaking with you soon.